things I gotta back east loving you.
720 WGN, Pete and Jane in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We all, unfortunately, have a cancer story.
We do.
Everybody has a cancer story. That's why I got involved with a charity called the HFoundation.org. Got you involved. We hosted Goombe Bash last year at Navy Pier.
An amazing event. How many people were there?
About 600, 700, 800 people?
I don't know. Let's ask Doc.
Doc, how many people were there? Do you know?
I think it was right at 1,000 people.
Yeah.
1,000 people at Navy Pier.
In the ballroom at Navy Pier, spilling out all sides, all there for a great cause.
And we just had another event called Comedy for Cancer in Downers Grove for the HFoundation.org. And joining us in studio is Dr. Milan Mrkić. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Pete.
The H Foundation, first of all, do we want to explain to people what it is? It's a bunch of guys that got together and formed this foundation to give money back to research for cancer.
Yeah, it's a group of small business people in the western suburbs. And like all of us, they've been touched by cancer that's afflicted their good friends. And there was a woman at one company that didn't survive. And the guys got together and decided they really wanted to do something that could help future cancer patients and make them survivors. And so they started the H Foundation. They've partnered with Northwestern's Cancer Center, the Lurie Comprehensive Cancer Center.
Sure.
And they really provide, they raise a lot of money. They raise a lot of passion for cancer.
Right.
They really extend our friend network. And they've made it possible for us to work on some really new cutting edge cures.
So the interesting thing is there are oncologists, which you are not. There are researchers, which you are.
Exactly. So what's exciting at the Cancer Center, and Northwestern's is one of the top centers in the country, really. We bring together medical students, researchers, PhD scientists and engineers developing the technologies, and our oncologists who are right there seeing the patients, and we work as teams.
That's great.
When we're developing the next therapies, the next imaging modalities that we use for early detection, researchers can't develop those without really understanding what the needs are.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cancer Center is really magical in bringing us together and letting us all put our best effort forward and make a difference.
I can't imagine. How often do you hear about a rare form of cancer that you've never heard about before?
Almost every day. When you think about it, we see the really hard cases.
Right. Of course you do.
Yeah.
Because the cases that we know how to treat, people come in, they get diagnosed, and they're really lucky that they've got a treatable form of cancer. We spend our time thinking about the hard cases, the ones that we don't have good treatments for yet. So every day, Pete.
Pancreatic cancer. How come they can't find a way to detect that? Early detection.
I'll tell you, there are a few cancers. Pancreatic is one.
Ovarian cancer?
Ovarian, glioblastoma, brain cancer, still a really challenging one. And every cancer is different. The way I like to say it is, what happens in cancer is our cells lose the ability to stop growing. So if you think about it, if you cut your skin, cells have to start growing and dividing right at the cut until they fill up the wound.
Right.
And then they have to know it's time to stop growing. You filled up the gap. In cancer, cells lose that ability to stop growing. And cancer is basically uncontrolled cell growth. And it keeps growing and it takes over healthy tissue. There are all kinds of reasons cells can break and stop or lose the ability to stop growing. And that means 10 people can have liver cancer, but they can have it for different reasons, and the treatments for each of them might be different.
God, wow. I mean, thousands of ways that you could treat different types of cancer.
And it's always different. And that's an interesting thing. The cells don't regenerate differently in different people. And so my question to you is, why is there so much cancer? It sounds very elementary, right? So we've had cancer forever. I think we hear about it more because media is bigger, technology is bigger, social media, we're talking about it. There's events and there's awareness things and research. But why is there so much cancer? Is it because it's so different?
You know, there's a few reasons. One is over time, as our lifespans increase, we're more likely to get cancer. Cancer oftentimes stems from mutations that accumulate. Sunlight is one of the causes of mutations. Things like smoking, carcinogens, different kinds of pollutants in the environment. And it's not like you walk outside one day, you're in the sun, and you get cancer. It's really over a long period of time, the more exposure you have, the greater at risk you are. And so as people have lived longer, they get to an age where they're then more likely to get cancer. As we've gotten better at curing other diseases, you know, heart disease and cardiovascular disease is still a real problem, but less of one than it was 20 years ago. And so people live a little longer, and then cancer becomes more
right,
of a threat.
Right. Dr. Milan Mrkcic from Northwestern Hospital is here. Lurie's Cancer Center at Northwestern University. Isn't that right?
Exactly.
Yes.
So at the Feinberg School of Medicine, the downtown campus, the medical campus, and that's where the Lurie Cancer Center is housed.
So you go to work every day, and you're exposed to different types of cancer, what causes cancer. Do you watch what you eat? Because when I think to myself, if I eat this, I wonder what's going to happen down the road. Or if I'm exposed to this, or my wife is worried about skin cancer, things like that. Does your mind work like that?
You know, in some sense it does. I think I've just always tried to be smart about exercise, about diet, sunlight, and other things. I'm not perfect. None of us are. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we all try our best.
And when you talk about mutations, cancer can be genetic. So they say breast cancer, if you have the family history of it, or ovarian cancer or prostate cancer, but not all cancers are genetic.
That's right. So if you think about skin cancers, those are most commonly caused by sunlight, too much sunlight, burning, et cetera. And that has a strong environmental component, just what we go through. Other cancers have a strong genetic component, and the example of breast cancer is a really good example there. And then a lot of cancers, there's a component of both. You may have a genetic disposition to have an increased risk of cancer, but it doesn't guarantee you'll get cancer at some point. It just means you're more likely to. And that's one of the frustrating things that we deal with, that, you know, people in principle could get screened more routinely and catch it early. And the best thing you could do for cancer is early detection.
Right.
It's always easier to treat at stage one early than later.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. I do a lot of work with brain disease, right? So the Parkinson's and Movement Advisory Council at Northwestern, we meet all the researchers. We talk to the researchers about what they're doing to find a cure for degenerative brain disease. They're not, you know, I don't know if they're close. I don't know where they're at. It's hard to understand. But from a cancer perspective, is there promise to show a way to cure it?
Yeah. So, you know, when we see the progress we've made in the past 20, 30 years, it really is remarkable. I mean, there are cancers today that are quite treatable, whereas 30 years ago, they were, you know, they're just terrible news to hear that you had it. As I said earlier, early detection has probably made the biggest difference. Our ability to do MRI and PET scanning lets us catch cancer at its earliest stage.
Mammograms, colonoscopy.
Exactly.
Listen to your body.
PSA testing.
PSA testing. I just went in this week. Had to take blood for that. Absolutely. Because I have four siblings that had four different types of cancer survivors. And you talk about curing for cancer, APL leukemia, highly curable. Right. I mean, think about the leaps and bounds that we've made with blood cancers.
Blood cancers are a great example. And, you know, every 5 years, we know that we're going to make real advances in certain cancers. But because cancer is not one disease,
yes,
it's really hundreds of diseases, we've got a lot of work to do. And
I can't imagine what a day is like in your life. Where do you start? It's like, Jane, we're going in, we're going to cure cancer today, we're going to find something. Well, I mean, God. It's crazy to think about.
You know, it's an extremely rewarding job I've got. I mean, I get the privilege of working with really motivated people. We've got incredible facilities. The H Foundation we were talking about earlier, it's friends like the H Foundation that give us a lot of the tools and resources that make us, put us in a position to do this work.
Right.
But it's hard work. You know, I mean, let me give you an example. One way we get a clue on cancer is, and this is what happens at the cancer center where we've got patients coming in, we may have 40 patients with a type of cancer that we still don't have a cure for. So we may want to genetically sequence each of those patients and then compare their genetic sequences to a population at large and ask, is there something different but common within this group? That's then the first clue that our basic scientists, our geneticists, use to try to track down, okay, where is that difference in the DNA? And what does it tell us? It usually tells us that there's a protein in those people that might be misfunctioning.
That protein. Sure. We always hear about the protein in this medical business.
Dr. Milan Mrkcic is in studio with us. I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, thehfoundation.org, Jane and I are a part of it. When people donate money and it goes to Lurie's Cancer Center, where does that money go? That's what we're going to talk about when we come back. It's 720 WGN. We put on a radio show every day. This guy goes to work and tries to find a cure for cancer. In studio with us is Dr. Milan Mrkcic. 312-981-7200 is our phone number, also our text line. Before the break, we talked about the HFoundation.org, just one of the foundations that gives to Lurie's Cancer Center. That money goes straight to research. What have you found out through the donations, or what has happened? What has you've discovered, I'm trying to say?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things in research today, we use really expensive, really cutting edge tools, technologies. And, you know, these things are at a scale where it's hard to buy them. It's hard to operate them. And it's hard to find the money from normal sources to do that. So the H Foundation, you know, one of the real benefits that we get is that we can use this money to bring in the most cutting edge piece of equipment and make it available to all of our researchers in the cancer center.
Oh, that's okay. Great. And expensive.
I mean, some of these things are millions of dollars, actually.
Wow.
And by having those tools, then we can have, you know, a jump start on figuring out, where do we go? How do we get a handle on this type of cancer, and how do we develop a treatment for it? The other thing that we do that's really important, you know, all of the research labs in the university, they're funded by the National Cancer Institute and other government agencies, among others. But they tend to fund, let's say, reasonably advanced ideas, ideas that you've already got some good support for. But the new ideas and somewhat crazy ideas can lead to the radical advances, and it can be hard to get funding for those at an early stage.
Because they're so radical?
Mm-hmm. They're so radical, yeah. They're new, and it's too easy to be critical of a new idea because there's no evidence for it yet.
Support, yeah.
And the H Foundation, a big part of those funds that that they provide the center are used to test out these new ideas. And we know that lots of these new ideas won't go anywhere. But if 10% do, and they're the 10% that change the future for a group of patients, that made a real difference. And that's one of the, I think, the most special ways that the H Foundation support for what we do makes a difference.
Right.
Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and go, I have an idea. I have a new idea how to test this.
Well, I'll tell you.
I haven't tried this yet.
Jane, when I was younger, yes. Now I'm a little bit lazier, but I remember the idea. So when I do wake up in the morning, I have
that
reaction.
Yeah, you write it down. Yeah. Before you used to run to the lab at 2 a.m. You're like, let me write this down. I'm going to go do it now.
Why does it take so long for cancer drugs to get approved in the United States? Hear about people going over to Europe or to Canada.
Yeah.
Why does it take so long?
You know, I mean, the process of really confirming that the drug works, you've got to test it in a lot of patients. And in fact, the way we start clinical trials, the first wave of patients aren't patients. They tend to be healthy young people that we're giving the drug to just to make sure that it's safe. And then we go to a group of patients and test to see whether it's working. That can take a couple of years to, you know, get enough of an observation period to know how much the drug has helped. And you've got to go through a few phases, phase one, phase two, and phase three. So it's not uncommon for trials to take several years. And the FDA is pretty good in terms of trying to accelerate the process when the drug would be the first drug available to treat a group of patients. But even then, it takes time. Other countries, not always, but in some areas, have, you might say, a lower bar. And so one can get through the testing process faster,
right?
Take that experience, those data, and then come back to the U.S. and use those data to help accelerate the process here.
Does that happen a lot?
Happens a fair amount, yeah. And because most drug companies are global, they really do they have to be. They've got to operate in Europe, here in Asia. And so they think about, you know, approvals globally.
What bothers you? Because we've talked about how we've made leaps and bounds with leukemia and breast cancer research. What is bothering you?
You know, for us, one of the real miracles in the past half dozen years have been immunotherapies. Antibodies, which are the natural molecules our body uses in our immune system, fighting off bacteria and viruses. And we've learned how to create antibodies that trick cancer cells. Cancer cells have this incredible ability oftentimes to turn off our immune systems. In a normal setting, as some of our cells are mutating and becoming cancerous, they don't grow because they get recognized by our immune systems and cleared, basically killed. But cancer cells then, they're smart. They evolve strategies to mask themselves from the immune system. And some of the drugs that we use it's kind of a cat and mouse game. Some of the drugs we use have then gone back at the cancer cell and prevented them from masking themselves from the immune system. And so these immunotherapies tend to work really well for blood cancers. They're not yet really effective for solid cancers, the kinds of cancers of our organs, pancreas, liver, brain, etc.
Right.
This is my passion. My passion is creating, re-engineering human antibodies to make them even more effective. So just to take an example, antibodies are Y-shaped molecules. The tips of the Ys are two sites that attach to cancer cells. We've learned how to make, I'd call them synthetic antibodies, where they have five or six arms.
Ooh.
So a much more stronger attachment.
Right.
And we think that's going to lead to better efficacy, better outcomes. And so for me, I'm just incredibly driven by this this vision that we can take nature's antibodies, re-engineer them and make them better.
Sure.
And get a leg up on cancer cells.
That's great. That's the best thing I've heard all year. It really is. Compare that to like people with stem cells, this big thing now.
Mm-hmm.
Do stem cells play a role anywhere in research for cancer, curing cancer?
They do. I mean, in a couple of ways. So stem cells in part are really exciting because they let us regenerate organs and tissue so that if you need to remove a tissue because it has cancer, stem cells could provide one strategy to get that organ back into a person. But it turns out that cancer uses stem cells in ways that aren't good for us. There are things called cancer stem cells.
Of course.
No.
And just
always finds a way, doesn't it?
Always finds a way. And so you may have 1% of the cancer cells, which are cancer stem cells, and if you're treating, if you remove 99% of the cancer, you may think that's really good. But if you haven't removed the stem cells, the cancer stem cells, they grow back.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to learn also, and this is, again, very recent work and really based on basic research, scientific insight. We're trying to figure out, can we develop therapies that go after the cancer stem cells? Because in principle, that's the population that you'd want to target.
Oh my God, my brain is spinning.
Of course, because it grows back.
I can't imagine.
Well,
it's just crazy.
I mean, yeah, the example, I think this in my head, my brother had a huge cancer tumor in his stomach, but it started growing. He had testicular cancer when he was 30, and who knows how he got the cancer, but it grew over 20 years, and then he had this big tumor. I thought he was just getting fat. and they went in for surgery and took it out, and then it continued to grow back. I'm assuming those were stem cells.
It's either the stem cells or they couldn't get all of it because they didn't know where the margins were, where it ended and normal tissue started. But this is, again, this is a good example. The story you just told is quite common.
Yeah, it is.
Depending where the cancer is and what type it is, somebody might think, you know, it's, you know, gained a little weight. Maybe I've got some kind of bump growing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all get that. And if you don't go in and get it checked out, you may not know. And so, again, the idea of early detection, when you think something might be wrong.
Something is wrong.
Listen to your body.
Listen to your body. We've always said that in our house. You got to listen to your body. Absolutely. And you got to have doctors, too. You got to have your people.
You got to have some experts. That's right.
And if you don't have an expert, ask your friend for an expert. And ask your friend to ask a friend for an expert.
And in Chicago, you're always one person away from somebody.
Yeah.
Definitely
can
so.
Can I ask you just, and this is not in the lines of research, but maybe it is. Have you ever, or do you ever consider, a lot of people do this holistic approach in addition to having, you know, being medically treated, but in the world of research, doing acupuncture or doing energy therapies in addition to being treated. Is there any research behind that?
There is, probably not enough to be candid. And, you know, we do know that there are real effects and there are placebo effects. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if somebody thinks they're getting a benefit, it actually helps. And we see that in drug trials all the time. When we test drugs in clinical trials, there's usually a group of patients, depending what the disease is, that would get a placebo, something that's not actual drug. And you always measure a benefit to that population. So we know that your brain is powerful. And if your brain thinks it's getting something that helps, your body can be helped.
Why not?
The biggest virtual reality machine there is our brains.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Amazing. Dr. Milan Mrkcic, thank you for coming in. It's great to see you.
Well, it's good to see you, Pete, Jane. Thanks for having me. And
we will see you at Goombay.
We'll see you at Goombay.
Yes.
Goombay Bash.
Can't wait.
Thanks to both of you, really,
absolutely,
for all you do. You've been great friends, great supporters of the Cancer Center and the H Foundation, and it makes a difference. And thanks for featuring us.
And just to let people know, the Goombay Bash is named after a drink. They were in the tropics or the Caribbean, and it was a Goombay drink, and they named it after this. And it's a gala where you show up in shorts and a Hawaiian shirt.
So fun.
You do not wear a suit, and everybody gets crazy. Definitely,
you know,
so.
It's fun. Everyone's there because they're passionate about cancer. They've been touched by cancer, but, you know, we figured out that we can have a fun night and we can do a lot to, you know, to help the future.
That's right.
Definitely.
Thank
so.
You. Fascinating stuff.
Thanks,
Thank
Doc.
You.
Good to see you. It's 720 WGN.